Hello, everyone. Your host, Taylor, here for a message for everyone who uses our show notes to find the amazing book, movie, and TV recommendations our guests bring to us every week. If you're listening to this episode on or after May 22nd, 2023, you might encounter some broken links in our show notes. This is because we're transferring to a new catalog system. We hope to have these broken links fixed up for you soon, but in the interim, if you encounter a broken link, you can look up that book, movie, or TV show on our new catalog, which is at cranston.oslri.net. Thank you and enjoy the show. And welcome to another episode of Downtime with the Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor, and the branch librarian at the Oaklawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
Hi, my name is Ken Hopkins, Jr. I am the director of the Cranston Technical Education at both Cranston High School East and Cranston High School West, and very happy to be here, Taylor. Thank you very much for the invite.
Thank you for joining me. So as you can tell by Ken's intro, a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about the vocational vocational technical education program at in Cranston.
We're going to make it very easy. We go career and tech education. We call it CTE. So anything CTE related, CTE is not your grandfather's VOTEC is how we call it.
All right. So a little bit later in the show, we will talk about that program. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with what have you been reading?
So I've been reading two books, actually. One is a reread. All the George R.R. Martin series that comes out. So I've been rereading Fire and Blood to coincide with that series that's, you know, going on HBO. My wife and I, we religiously every Sunday would get our own charcuterie board and get it going. Maybe with a little glass of something on the side, you know, and watching the Game of Thrones episodes along the way. And I was very hopeful that somehow it would be redeemed from the last season, which condensed three seasons into one season. But neither here nor there. I had some flashbacks of Lost when I was watching that last season and just being like, come on, not again. The other book I'm reading I actually brought it with me. It's a very interesting book called Plague Wars. A colleague of mine recommended it. Very ominous, the terrifying reality of biological warfare by Mangold and Goldberg. Recommended. It actually came out in 1999, and there is a sequel, but I'm reading this one first. Basically, it's nonfiction work, but it talks about elements of government interplay and world politics and how the generation of biological warfare evolved over time and how it has implications even in today's geopolitical environment, how it relates to warfare, how it relates to everything. And it's a tough book to read at times because it really gets into some of the depravity that relate to some of the experimentation related to some of this. The elements of biological warfare. And I don't know, my mind kind of goes in that direction sometimes in terms of what I like reading for entertainment. You know, maybe it's because The Last of Us is on HBO and I'm just looking for some background related to it. But a book recommended by a colleague, and we have some very interesting discussions along those lines. But reading those two right now for personal, besides all the educational articles that come out on a near weekly basis and hundreds of emails per day.
It's funny when you started talking about the book, I was thinking of The Last of Us because I just started watching it. And everyone who's has guested on the show pretty much since it has come out had talked about how they were watching it. I was waiting for it all to be out. So we watched the first two episodes over the weekend, my partner and I. Like the whole beginning, which they needed to set the stage because the game did it in a slightly different way, but they needed to set the stage about like how bad a fungal kind of pandemic would be with like that, the beginning scene of the like experts talking about that. They were like, yeah, if there would be no medicine, no vaccine, it would be like end game.
Yeah, it's terrifying, but the best part about the show, not to jump into that, but
yeah,
it's, you know, it's not a zombie show. It's about human relationships. It's about the expanse of human emotion and how that interacts. Absolutely. And that's the beautiful part. Like, thinking about those moments, you have this dystopian world, but how it presents and how it manifests in terms of human communication and human emotions and, you know, the highs and lows associated with it. That's the essence of the show. And that's what's really cool about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was, even before the show had come out, because I'd watched my partner play the whole game. It was funny that I think I told this story before on the podcast, but that was like our pandemic activity. Like when we were not like the height of lockdown, but we still kind of like weren't really going out. I'm high risk. So we have been very cautious this whole time. And so it was like kind of weird that it was like we were in a pandemic. I was watching him play this game that was about this kind of like fungal infection that spreads across the world. But I described to other people when all the previews were coming out that I was like, the game is about trauma, you know, like the game is about how we as human beings react to extreme situations and the extremity of emotions, mostly on the negative side.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really what is at the core of it. And I think what makes it such a compelling thing to watch.
So I always love reading about, you know, old school philosophers and how they thought, and, you know, the constant debate between a Hobbesian versus Lockean society and getting to the root of human nature. And you watch The Last of Us and it has everything. It has the whole range. Every philosopher is right in The Last of Us.
Yeah.
You know, it really comes down to that polarity, but that same dynamic, the interplay between, and just the evolution of characters and how they present themselves in different groups, different situations. It's awesome. Phenomenal show.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to watching the rest. Yeah. So, I mean, we're kind of already talking about shows. So we kind of naturally transitioned right into that. Are you watching anything else interesting lately?
My wife and I are kind of always in a cyclical repeat of The Office. I don't know why. It's just a kind of go-to thing to get some chuckles and laughs along the way. I you know, every once in a while I'll get some wanderlust and turn on Anthony Bourdain, No Reservations or Parts Unknown, and just go through an episode. And I love seeing how his interplay with different cultures manifests on the screen, and just the dialogue and getting into different places and getting ideas of places to go. That's really phenomenal in terms of giving a very, I find it's a very humble and human approach to the whole travel concept, and really appreciating people for who they are and what they are, and not getting into just like the touristy stuff, but trying to really delve into how it manifests, how culture manifests through food, how culture manifests through the communication of really those relationships, of which food is a major part. That's love that show.
I just totally blanked on the name of it now, but have you watched the Padma Lakshmi food travel show on Hulu? It's based mostly in the US.
No, I haven't seen that, but it sounds like it's the next
it's
show.
It's really good. It's really good. So yeah, it's focused on America and kind of highlighting different American like ethnic groups and subcultures through their food. And I think it really does a good job of being really intersectional too. Like they do talk to some Native people and learn about Native American food. Because some of the food that we think of as Native American food actually is like food that came out of them being relocated and like dependent on the government for resources like food, like fry bread. The reason fry bread is so ubiquitous between different tribes is because fry bread became a result of them getting like government subsidized food. And so like getting flour and stuff, because they weren't using processed wheat flour, because that wasn't really a thing that was here. They were using corn and a lot of other crops that were like native to America. So it was interesting to see like, here is the stuff that genuinely is coming from like the roots of our culture and the actual like pre-colonization of America versus like what came out of necessity of the things that happened to them at the hands of the colonizer.
Yeah, a brutal reality.
Yeah.
Adapt to it, but yeah. it reminds me not of the same, because obviously we talk very different circumstances, but even like Depression area cooking with Italian. We're in Cranston. There's a huge Italian population, of which I'm half Italian, believe it or not. And but like pizzas, the reason pizzas were in vogue in early area Depression times, because when people worked in factories, just take what was made and put it on top of the machine and it heated it up. And
that was
the pizza dynamic. So it's something that, you know, different cultures adapt with their traditions according to what's predicated by the times. And seeing that that's a very interesting story. But that's one I got to check out. I got to check out that show now.
Yeah. And now it's Taste is in the title, but I like totally blanked. But I thought it was great. And it's not super long either. Cool. Taste the Nation. Thank you, Dave. So Taste the Nation. It was very good. And then they had like a shorter second season that was based on different holidays. And so that was also very interesting too, like what different cultures do for Christmas or Christmas Eve, because a lot of cultures, Italian being one of them, Christmas Eve is a bigger deal than Christmas.
Oh, yeah. and fishes.
Yeah. So it was super interesting. So if you like food travel shows and you want to learn more about people living in America who experience is different than yours, definitely recommend.
Oh, absolutely. I'm on it. Thank you for the recommendation.
You're welcome. I'm not sure if, like I said, except we just started The Last of Us. I'm not sure what more I can add to our TV conversation, because like I said, we've discussed it heavily on the show already, because it's at the top of everyone's mind, partially because it's so good. I've also been watching along with the newest season of The Mandalorian, which is not a surprise to longtime listeners of the show. I'm a huge Star Wars fan.
It hurts because it shows what the prequel and episode 7, 8, and 9 could have been. You know, it's so well done and gets you involved in the universe. You know, it has that dark element to it, but at the same time preserves the ongoing theme of heroism and how that manifests in the Star Wars universe. It's just awesome. Great, great show.
Yeah.
I'd love to see how that affects future movies, you know, coming out, because there are supposed to be some new ones. I know there's one coming out called The Acolyte, which is more Sith oriented, which I'm very interested to see.
And High Republic, I think. So we're going into a different time period than we had seen in the Skywalker saga, as it were.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what they do with movies going forward, and kind of the stories they can tell now that we've moved on from Skywalker men either saving or destroying the galaxy.
Yeah, I used to play Knights of the Old Republic. You know, that those two games were phenomenal. But when you talk about the lore and getting into the background of everything that we saw in the movies, so those are two great games that definitely had great contributions to the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, and then the sequel trilogy came out, and they were like, "Throw all that in the garbage. None of that's completely go. Now.
Yep, no point to them." And they were awesome.
Yeah.
It was like, why ruin a good thing?
Yeah. I've seen speculation online that people are like, oh, like because of whatever kind of like small bits of lore that they've pulled out from things that aren't canon anymore, that like, oh, maybe the next thing they're going to explore is like a Knights of the Old Republic kind of thing. But I don't know if that'll ever happen. I'm trying to keep my expectations low with Star Wars things. So then like I can't be disappointed.
I don't you get tired of reboots every once, you know, like where's the original ideas? Let's get a different IP. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's get a different universe, et cetera. Or just even in Star Wars, a completely different time period, you know, a different way, a different view or venture from it. Just, I don't know. Sometimes watching the same story manifest in a different way just doesn't quite do it.
No, for sure. And that's why, I felt kind of lukewarm about Andor. My boyfriend really enjoyed Andor, and he was like, this is what Star Wars storytelling could be. Like, he gets frustrated with like the fan base, because he's like, the fan base just like keeps coming back for this like Clone Wars like regurgitated storylines, and they don't show up for some of this like you said, kind of like original ideas within that universe. And so So I'm always gonna come like, back to are it. They going to do good things, or are they going to do things that are lucrative?
Yeah, the lightsabers.
That's true. Recent stuff has been very absent of lightsabers.
Very true.
Yeah. So,
they'll come back.
Yeah. One of my boyfriend's friends says that he's like, I come to Star Wars for political intrigue and laser swords. And he's like, so if those things aren't there, I'm out. So maybe he enjoyed Andor for the political intrigue, even though there weren't laser swords.
And we'll return to the show after a quick break.
An online archive featuring keyword searchable local historical newspapers, including the Cranston Herald, is now available online to Cranston Public Library cardholders. The archive includes documents from 1885 to 1977. Additional newspaper archives from 1977 to 2016 are available separately from inside the library only. This archive is brought to you by Advantage Preservation and funded by the Champlin Foundation. Visit cranstonlibrary.org/databases to find out more. Unleash your inner child and join us at the Auburn Branch every Friday at 4 p.m. for Color and Calm. There will be coloring books, mandalas, colored pencils and markers, as well as herbal and decaf teas and soothing music. No registration required. Decompress and head into the weekend refreshed. For questions, email auburn@cranstonlibrary.org. All right, so I want us to have enough time to talk about your work in the Cranston school system with the career and tech program. So do you want to start off explaining what that program is and maybe how it's different from other programs like it? Like you said, it's not your grandfather's vo-tech school.
Yeah, absolutely. So Cranston has absolutely phenomenal career and tech ed programs, of which many of them have been operational for quite a while, like quite a long time. And that's contributed to the overall fabric, not only of how it's produced and manifested here in Cranston, but also statewide. So here at the Cranston Area Career and Tech Center, which is on the Cranston West campus, there are 11 programs, each of which have their own little nuance related to the overall career in tech ed. So we're going through medical pathways program, entrepreneurship, interactive digital media, culinary, architecture, pre-engineering, robotics. We have the only aquaculture program in the state, which is pretty,
wow.
It's kind of weirdly ironic. We're the ocean state. We only have one aquaculture program, but it's phenomenal. I mean, yeah, it's basically a full like living aquarium downstairs in the building here. And it's a really awesome program. Graphic design, information technology, and then construction. And if you go on anywhere on the Cranston West campus or even other school-based campuses, you see something built out of wood, it's probably coming from our construction program here. And that's the cool part about it, is that it's not just taking elements and teaching in the classroom, it's putting those applications to real life programs. Like for instance, going back to the aquaculture program, two out of the three oyster farms here in Rhode Island are owned by former students of the aquaculture program here.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like, it gives that real world experience and practicality to it. Over at Cranston East, there were four programs going into this year. Army JROTC, of which is one of the largest longest standing JROTC programs in the state. It was also another medical pathways program over there, criminal justice program. And we're building some more programs over there, which computer science and IT. I'm very excited about mirroring educational pathways. I'm sorry, we have educational pathways program at Cranston West as well, but we're also mirroring it over at Cranston East. And then getting into audio engineering as a new cool program that's being developed over at Cranston East and has been approved going into next year. So each of those programs has that you have specific standards over the course of 4 years or 3 years. One, it could be coming out with a certain credential, like for instance, coming out with OSHA standards, coming out with certain build safe standards, or having a college credit bearing class attached to the program of which you're receiving. That's your credential, is that you've passed a college level class, got a transferable credit in high school, which obviously acts as a cost-saving mechanism, especially right now when kids need it as much as possible to have those.
Absolutely.
So the other thing, too, is we are all 100% of our students are aligned to and participate in Skills USA competitions, which is like the CTE competition, which occurs on the state level and then on the national level. And we have kids who medal pretty much almost every year on the national level associated with just our programs here in Cranston. Going back to last year, we had silver medalists associated with our pre-engineering and robotics program and bronze medalists associated with our MedPath programs. That's on the national level. So when you're talking about something that's career in tech ed, it's really cool how Rhode Island, by taking key steps and really kind of focusing energy in it, is pioneering something which has now become in vogue in education nationwide. There's a tremendous push for career in tech education, not just for students who are part of the programs, but for all students. And I was talking to a colleague who now works for the U.S. Department of Education, and Rhode Island is one of four states that's leading the way in terms of career and tech education, even so much so that right now here at Cranston West, 1,700 students, largest high school population in Rhode Island, as going into this year, we had 62% of our students, that's over 1,000, participating in career and tech. They're involved in a program. One of the highest percentages and highest number of students in one location anywhere in the state and almost anywhere in the country. So it's just, the kids, they love it. It's vibrant. The educators are phenomenal, very vibrant in terms of what they produce, what they manifest, how interested in, they take that level of passion associated with their career work and bring it to the education of students in this field. And they go on to do incredible things. So it's just, it's an awesome, continually developing set of programs that are, I have the luxury of being a part of.
So kind of comparing it to the old Votech model versus what you guys are doing now, a lot of people think about Votech as for kids who aren't college bound, you know, for kids who college is not necessarily the best fit for them post high school. The way that you guys do it now is I guess, like, are people leaving your program? Well, you said about college credit, so I'm assuming the answer is yes. But are people leaving your program with all their college prep requirements and prepared to go on to college? Or is it a majority of people going right into the workforce afterwards?
It's both, but there's a sizable portion of our student population that goes directly on to a 2 or 4 year institution after high school. The focus what's in vogue nationwide is for students to come out and be college and career ready so that they have, before getting into the college experience and being like, all right, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? Having something of what they want to do or maybe not do, or have some type of exposure. Part of every one of the programs is 80 hours of work-based learning. So that can either be going off and doing an internship, doing some type of job shadowing, doing some type of community or industry-based project within the school to show what it is to actually do work, what it's like to work for a living, what it's like to, you know, work with a team and develop projects so that when they're leaving high school, they can start making decisions. All right, if I want to get in the trades, I go in this direction. If I want to go into the workforce, of which we have a large amount of students who go immediately and work for Electric Boat. We are partners with them. Our plumbing program, I forgot to mention that over at Cranston East, is becoming the only pipe fitting program in the entire state. And that's aligned with Electric Boat so that students come out making more than $25 an hour right out of high school with benefits. And they have a job and a potential career straight out of high school. So it's really catering to the needs of the students and choosing, selecting, and cultivating programs that have value to them in both settings, from the collegiate standpoint, as well as the career-oriented standpoint.
And so who would you describe as, like, not the ideal student, but like, who would you describe as a good candidate for doing your career in tech program?
Anybody who has an interest in it. You know, and that's the key thing is, when we talk about levels of engagement within the high school community, you know, and it's not, you know, denigrating other coursework or classes, but really what it comes down to is because of the real world application, because you're actually providing that level of interactivity, it's something that's truly engaging for kids. You know, and our job as educators is to try to ignite those passions and make sure that it's done in a way that teaches them with something that they can carry on, maybe not even to that career, but then transfer those skills, transfer that workplace environment, collaboration, team-based concepts into the job that they're eventually going to do. I mean, even in my job right now, as the director overseeing, supervising the programs, but also working on program expansion, marketing, everything, this is not something that no job you do in a silo. Like even doing this podcast right now, we got Dave working with us. You know, you got to work as a team, collaborative mechanics in order to do that. That's the way the job market's going. That's what's necessary for students. So that's what we're trying to simulate on a high school environment. And that takes place not only here in Cranston, but throughout the state. But we do a really good job with it here in Cranston.
Not to shift away from the positive, but I'm curious, was there any challenges during the kind of height of the COVID era with this kind of hands-on program?
Yes. And I wasn't here in that role, in this role at that time. During the COVID years, I was served as principal at East Greenwich High School and then came over here this year to take on this role. But talking with teachers about that dynamic, it was a migration of primarily virtual-based functions, like doing architecture instead of building something. Yeah, you have to build it, but it was very focused on CAD, computer assisted design and drafting, mm-hmm. in order to create some type of virtual component. But it took away from that hands-on interactivity of what manifesting, making it happen and working together and being, you know, out in the field doing something with it. So like even this year, we had three kind of dilapidated sheds in a Quonset hut behind the Career and Tech Center in our construction, one of our construction classes. Our junior level coursework was designed to go out there, take them down, dismantle the Quonset hut in a way that was done, work with our architecture students to design an entirely new storage facility for our students and for the career and tech programs here, and then build it. And that's what they're doing right now. So the tough part was, how do you take everything that's hands-on and turn it into a virtual setting and communicate it accordingly through computer-based resources? Obviously, the pandemic had effects on all of us. For us in education, it was really, really a struggle. You know, there were times when it showed the devotion of educators, because let me tell you something, people may think it's an easy task taking what we have done on a daily basis and turning it into a virtual environment. It was a completely different way of teaching, right? So it's like learning how to do algebra, and then you have a completely different way to do algebra that you're supposed to learn and implement within that 1 year. It was kind of a mind-blowing shift that was done, you know, fairly well considering the time frame and the circumstances. But I'm glad we're back where we are right now.
Was there any positives from having to make that shift that the career and tech program have been able to bring with them into the phase of the pandemic that we're in now?
Well, I think there's a renewed sense of community and collaboration. You know, that's really, when we're talking about all the levels of social emotional negatives that arose as a result of pandemic, levels of social based anxiety, levels of depression, the cure for it is to be around each other. And I think a lot of people, even the students, realize that that's what was missing for a long portion of time, was that inability to connect, to be in each other's presence, or just to communicate on that regular. You know, even if it was artificial and done through a school environment, that it's still something that's important, that's necessary, and it's part of our human condition. And that renewed sense of being back together is very, very important to all of us now. Little silver lining.
So what would you say to parents whose young people in their lives have expressed interest in one of the career and vo-tech programs in Cranston?
Definitely. So we do an application process that goes through a lottery-based system because of the number of applications that we get. We did a specific marketing campaign that, because we have four new programs over at Cranston East, and we were trying to increase the number of applications from certain subsets and demographics within our Cranston community, but also anybody who wanted to apply, because we're a regional tech center. So we started advertising on different radio stations, Bell Senti in the morning, but we also advertised on some of the Latino stations, and that and really focused on some of our MLL, multi-language learner populations here in Cranston to show that there's an opportunity that supports and provide more chances for kids to get involved with these programs. So that was a key marketing aspect this year. And it really worked because we have wait lists pretty much for every single one of our programs. But we have students from everywhere in Cranston involved in every single one of our programs, which is awesome. So an application process comes out in November. It goes till about early February. And then we do the lottery process for the programs. And then there's roster shifts that happen. You know, somebody moves out of the district. Somebody chooses to go to a different school, which opens up a spot. So we're in that phase of the shifting rosters right now. But it's awesome seeing the interest and numbers in career and tech ed programs here in Cranston.
Do you guys in the lottery process like prioritize Cranston residents versus kids coming from other school systems, or is it completely like even playing field after all the applications are added to the lottery?
So the Cranston students are prioritized in terms of the overall number distribution. We are a regional tech center, so we do have kids from throughout the area. Even there's, when you look at the ride map for transportation, recently they made geographic regions so that if a student applies from another city, but they're within the geographic region, kind of there's a statewide busing mechanism in order to get there. So we have students from all over. We have students from Johnston, North Providence, Providence, Central Falls, Lincoln, Coventry, Smithfield, you know, all over. But the percentage breakdown that we apply is the vast predominantly Cranston students, because we want to provide opportunities for Cranston students. That's a key element of it. So, and then we try to shift things around. If you don't get your first choice, well, we're trying to get you in your second choice or your third choice just to stay involved with something. So when somebody applies, they're not applying just for one program, they're applying to three programs. And we try to fit everybody and move, shift around and work just to support students and families throughout the career and tech ed application process. But yeah, we want as many kids from Cranston as possible taking part of these programs.
Of course. Do students have to choose that path in ninth grade in order to join the program?
Yes, because they're four-year programs. So the way it works is freshman and sophomore year, they're semester-based. One of the cool things that happens in Cranston, and this is a real key thing, I've been in part of different districts developing career and tech programs. We have a block schedule in Cranston. And that's key for a few different reasons. Number one, it helps align to make it a four-year progression for the students so that it's freshman year, second semester, it's the first class, the introductory class in the program, first semester of sophomore year, and then junior and senior year are full year-long courses where it really gets to the nitty-gritty, that certification aspect of the course. But embedded in and really focused on that senior year, we scheduled all senior level classes to start during fourth period block, which is 12:30. So we have kids leaving school to go off and do work, job shadowing, internships. And because it's starting at 12:30, 1 o'clock, as opposed to 4 o'clock, these kids actually get exposure during the workday instead of leaving school and getting to some place at 3:30 and the workday is almost done. That key shift opened up more opportunities relative to career and tech ed here in Cranston. Just as a programmatic, and that's not something that every place has embraced yet, but it's a cool opportunity that exists here.
So what would you want parents to know if maybe they're hesitant to have their kid choose a less conventional high school path?
That you're not choosing a career right now. That's a key component. Even if you do one of these programs, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're locked in with that career path for the rest of your life or going to even a college that's associated with that program. I still ask the kids what they want to be when they grow up because I'm looking for ideas myself. You know, they essentially what it does is it provides a vehicle to really get into engagement and interest during high school. And students that are part of career and tech, I was just at a recent conference down in the Virginia area, down in DC, about career and tech. And one of the findings that was done in a piece of research that was associated with New York and Connecticut was that smaller based schools and programs, of which this would be considered one, that offer opportunities for everybody, showed increased graduation rates associated with the work production and how students progressed during their high school years. So by just having that level of interest, having something that ties to that high school identity and growing with a program for 4 years is an extra set of eyes. It's an extra kinship. It's an extra team that kind of rallies around to support each other. And the benefit is increased points of achievement throughout the high school experience, better attendance, GPA, and better graduation rates as a result. So if you can get involved in one of the programs, definitely get involved with it.
So if people want more details about like each program, the type of certifications that kids could get out coming out of these programs, things like that, is there information like that somewhere, like online?
Yes, actually, it is our Career and Tech Center website. It's cactc.cpsed.net. And that will take you to, it says Cranston Area Career and Tech Center, but that encompasses both Cranston West and Cranston East programs. So we have told now we have 19 programs between the two schools. And there's one-page summaries that go give the overview of the course progression. Part of the Rhode Island standard is that you have to have a 3-course progression in order to be an approved program. We actually have 4 associated with our programs, but it gives the certifications, the outcomes, if it's tied with a college credit. You can also, you know, check out some of the cool stuff. We really have emphasized this year using Instagram to show off what's happening in our programs. So each of our programs has its own Instagram account and is tied to a universal CACTC underscore. That's our Instagram handle, just to see the highlights of everything cool that's happening with our programs. That's really where you kind of take all this theoretical, everything that we're talking about right now, put it to a visual, put it to a video, and see what's happening on a daily basis. I remember one from early on, I was talking about aquaculture. I have a student advisory council, and a representative from the student advisory council was talking about the processes that were going on there. So what they did is they developed a recyclable system where they take fish waste associated with the tanks and put it through a series of filters in order to fertilize herbs that are growing that are then used as part of our culinary program. Right.
It's
a very cool, you know, integrated kind of green solution system of what was something that we're doing here.
And that the different programs like want to support each other. And it's not like this clicky thing of like, well, we're the aquaculture kids. And, you know, like that's lovely to see, too.
Yeah, we bond together our projects. Actually, a cool project that's coming up that's part of a state initiative. There was a grant realignment associated with food trucks because it's part of the Minority Business Enterprises Group, which is finding key ways for people of diverse backgrounds to get entrance into business community. And food trucks is one of the burgeoning industries here in Rhode Island, but it's also a very accessible, low money upfront way to get started. So 13 districts, of which Cranston was one of them, got food trucks that are paid for by this grant from the Rhode Island Department of Ed. And what this does is now we have our culinary program, obviously, is associated with food trucks, but we also have our entrepreneurship kids, our interactive digital media kids talking about social media and website design to let them know where the food truck is and the menu. And then we have our graphics design program designing what does the menu look like? What does the exterior of the food truck look like? So there's 4 programs working in sync in order to develop this new initiative. So it's just a very, very cool thing. Myself and a few other administrators went to presentations by our freshman entrepreneur kids about the cost effectiveness and breakdown of different types and themes of food and how that would affect the overall cost basis for the food truck operations. What a great thing. You're talking about program integration. It shows kids how to make their business a reality and gives them a venue to do it.
So sometime in the near future, if you attend a food truck event, Cranston students might be running that food truck?
You might very well see it as a, yeah. In fact, there's going to be a statewide competition associated with the 13 districts that received the food trucks October 21st at Chase Farm in Lincoln. And it's going to have representatives from all the 13 food trucks who are participating, as well as I'm kind of in charge of organizing this 13 different live bands and music from each different place so that you go to any food truck festival, you got somebody playing music in the background, you got the food trucks there on display, and it brings this whole like community open green space type event. And that's what we're trying to simulate up there. There'll be a governor's award and a commissioner's award for the best design food truck as well as the best food. So we're starting to talk a little bit of smack to each other in terms of districts, who's going to come out with the best overall product and food. I'm very confident in Cranston's overall design. It looks like we're going in the direction of Cranston calzones because there's no real calzone food truck on the market out there. Well as our culinary program, working with our students from Life Skills, which is intensive special needs and for special education. They work with culinary program and produce calzones on Wednesdays. Those things sell out here at the school every single time. There are alumni who call in and say, do you guys still sell calzones? Can we get these calzones anywhere? Because it's just one of those things that's that nostalgia associated with the Cranston West High School tradition. And now we're hopeful to have them in food trucks form.
Well, that's very exciting. Everyone keep your eye out for more information about the Cranston School's upcoming food truck. And we will put links to the website about the program, the Instagram down in the show notes. So people can find more information about that there.
Facebook and Twitter for us. I'm gonna say it for all us old folks over here.
Yeah. Is Twitter a site that old people are on now?
It's borderline. I'm gonna say it's I don't find there's a lot of kids on Twitter right now, which is funny. Fair. Because you go back 4 or 5 years ago, and Twitter was our means of communicating with our students because everybody had Twitter. But now it's migrated to Instagram as the primary means of connecting with students in a student account. So it's like when we're talking about media connecting to the markets, Instagram for the students, Facebook for all the parents and guardians out there, and Twitter is that kind of thing in between that a lot of us in the educational circles use quite frequently.
Twitter for all us millennials.
That's it.
First the 90s American Girl historical dolls, and now Twitter being for old people.
Hey, I'm on the that first cusp of the millennial group. 1980 to 1985 was a very sweet spot in between Gen X and millennials that I think is one of the best generations ever.
As Eliza Schlesinger will say, an elder millennial.
That's it, an elder millennial. We didn't have cell phones growing up, but we definitely knew how to play video games. So
it's true. All right. So we wrap up the show with a segment I call The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or bookish related question. So I thought I would ask you, if you were forced to read outside your comfort zone, which genre / topic would you choose to explore and why? So, I mean, forced is a strong word, but I mean, if you challenged yourself to kind of go out of what you normally gravitate towards, what do you think you'd want to explore?
That's a tough one. I don't know, because it's tough because I read in a lot of different genres at different times, just, based upon something somebody shares.
Yeah.
So it's everywhere between fantasy to, nonfiction works to realistic fiction or historical fiction. I don't know. It would probably be something more in the historical fiction or just a plain non-dystopian type book like this, something related to a history or biography. I don't think like I read as much.
Who's the guy who wrote 1776? McCullough?
David McCullough.
Yeah. So like that kind of thing, that's straight up and down historical kind of stuff.
There was a book I read called Guns, Germs, and Steel, which a very, very interesting anthropological kind of historical aspect of how basically, Eurocentric identities based upon those three things, really kind of colonization processes got throughout the world. That was pretty intense in terms of read. I haven't read a McCullough in a while. Maybe that's the one to go through.
I'm curious, do you read graphic novels?
I haven't. I would love to read a graphic novel.
I was going to say that could be something worth exploring because I really try to encourage people that it's not all superheroes and fantasy and one of my favorite kind of subgenres of, because graphic novel is more of a format, is graphic memoir. So there's like a lot out there of people using that format and sequential art to share really touching, intimate stories about their life.
Ooh.
So
would something like People of New York be one of the,
I'm not familiar with People of New York.
It's there's an author that just finds random people, right?
Oh, it started off as like a I don't know if it was Facebook or whatever, like account, right?
Yes.
Or Humans of New York?
Humans of New York, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's photography, but that, so that wouldn't be quite like that, but a book that's very focused, it is a book very focused on images and stuff. And I always found it interesting when I saw those posts like go around online of all the interviews he did, because he eventually, I think, branched out and went to other places besides New York, like went overseas and stuff. So
but we talk about New York. I mean, you got that
format.
That's that place where everybody throughout the world comes together, you know, looking for some type of opportunity. And it was some profound stories.
For sure. All right. So thank you for joining me. And thank you, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to respond to our last chapter question or suggest a last chapter question of your own, you can reach out to us via email at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. You can also reach out to us via social media with the hashtag DowntimeCPL. If you're feeling generous, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. This has been another episode of Downtime. Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Nomi Haig, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza. And our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime. See, like, I can't talk and Google at the same time, but Dave can listen and Google at the same time. So that's the beauty of this arrangement.